From London, the National Broadcasting Company presents War Telescope, a review of the war week and a forecast of possible developments to come. War Telescope features Elmer Peterson of NBC's London staff, a veteran reporter of the European scene. For his regular Saturday report, we take you now to London.
This is Elmer Peterson in London. Here in Britain, we again have the feeling of waiting impatiently, waiting for the curtain to go up on big developments. The great new air offensive against Germany is partly responsible. So are the rumors that the long-awaited conference between Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill has been arranged for. Also the belief that new blows of some kind are about to fall on one or more of the weak points of Hitler's European fortress, somewhere along the tremendous coastline which the Germans must defend. It's a situation which sees British public opinion and attitude in a curious state at the moment. There's an obvious impatience here and an obvious irritability, and it comes forth in 100 different ways. This may be due in part to war weariness, to the natural effect of plunging deeper into another dark and dreary winter. But it's also due to a sense of urgency, and to the feeling that there's nothing to do but wait now. And one result is that the British people don't react in the old way to speech-making, to reviews of the war, to reminders of what's been achieved. Perhaps because their faith in Allied leadership is stronger than ever. Perhaps because the average Briton is convinced that a master plan of Allied strategy is underway. But the British realize, too, that the secrets of that strategy can't be revealed. And this makes them restless. It limits them, after all, to endless discussion of Britain's post-war problems. It makes them sensitive to such things as the announced release of Oswald Mosley, Britain's fascist leader, who has been in prison since the war began. It makes them more easily irritable in their personal relationships. All told, the public mood here, therefore, is a strange one at the moment. In his own way, the average Briton now feels that the time has come for a great concerted blow at Germany, a blow to break down German organization, cause military and political upheavals that can end the war promptly. But he's come to realize, too, that these blows are still in the making, that German organization is still basically intact, that the Germans are, in their way, not doing too badly in their fight for time. The average Briton also has come to regard reports of weak German morale in a more skeptical manner of late. So what we have here now is a curious marriage of confidence and recognition of realities. What hopes the British do have for a quick end to the war, they're pinning more and more now on air power. These hopes rise and fall. Today, with the reports of a new air offensive against Germany, these hopes have gone up again. For one thing, the new air offensive, on a scale never before achieved and despite winter weather conditions, has done much to give the British a new feeling of action. It's some compensation for the disappointment over the loss of the island of Leros, the delays in the land campaign in Italy. It's a new demonstration also of the extent of Allied planning and preparation. For these are times here in Britain when you find yourself quite convinced that air power from the West, working with land attacks in Russia, may do the trick. Here in Britain, where we have known the devastating results of modern air power, you read of these raids on Germany with your own private feelings of how terrible they are. The thought, how can the Germans stand it, crosses your mind immediately, and for good reason. And there's one simple question to be raised now about the war in Europe. It's taken for granted here that the Germans will break eventually, that sooner or later that highly organized German war machine is going to crack. But it can crack in one of two ways, or both, namely on land or in the air. Either way, the results will be fatal. In fact, a solid view of the war in Europe is that it's being fought in the main in two elements, on the land and in the air. What the British Russians are doing on land is, in its way, no more effective than what these tremendous fleets of Allied bombers are doing from the skies above Hitler's tormented people. Yesterday, as example, a solidly built, competent airman gave correspondents here in London his version of the air war against Germany. That airman was Major General William E. Kepler, chief of the 8th Air Force Fighter Command. His view is that Allied air forces already have defeated the German High Command's aerial strategy. He predicted that the air attacks on Nazi Europe will go on until German industry and resistance have been completely shattered. And he made these statements with a quiet confidence that was impressive, with the same sort of confidence you get from the men here who speak for the RAF. The simple and yet clearly understandable point that no country can survive once its defenses against modern air attack are beaten down. The Germans know this, and they fear it. That's indicated by the manner in which they have been withdrawing fighter planes from the Russian front. And we are obviously about to see a gigantic new attack on Germany from the air, an offensive to strike simultaneously and in great strength at several targets, in order to confuse the German defenses and render them impotent. The important question is, however, how long will it take for Allied strategy by air, on land, by sea, to break down German wartime organizations? On this point, there's far less optimism here in Britain now than a few months ago. For no matter how you twist and turn the arguments, it's clear that the Germans are still fighting. They still retain a good measure of ability to organize their war potential and their defenses. In this, they have the advantage of a preparation for war that began many years ago. And today, the Germans, it's realized here, are profiting by that careful preparation. It's evident in their retreat from Russia, in their ability to organize a successful offensive in the Aegean, in their ability to deal with the German civilian population. There's a limit to this, of course. For the trouble with the German war organization is that it's so complicated, so finely drawn, so dependent on forceful measures, and so exposed to attack now, that a sharp break in any direction can spread quickly. It has no reserve power. But you can find plenty of examples that it's still good. Here in Britain, as example, there's a great deal of conscious pride on the part of public health officials. Despite the rigors and hardships of war, the British are healthy. There have been no wartime epidemics. But the same is true in the main of Germany today. The German people are still being fed. The great raids on Germany have not been followed with severe epidemics. The Germans have faced and are facing really colossal problems in evacuation of cities, care of homeless, treatment of casualties. Whether they can continue to manage this is one thing, but so far they have managed pretty well, due to their ability to organize, an ability that can't be denied. The same holds true in many other fields of activity. The way in which the German Luftwaffe is husbanding its fighter strength, for example. In other words, we are now engaged, as the British see it, in a phase of the war which is a race against time. A race against between the ability of the United Nations to get organized for the final blows and the ability of the Germans to keep their organization. The master plan of the Allies is not designed to crush each and every German division, to eliminate every German plane from the skies. It is designed to wreck the basic organization behind those divisions and those air fleets. A raid on a Luftwaffe repair base in Norway is as much a part of this strategy as a raid on an airfield in Greece. The Germans are struggling to make their defense organization more intact. We are working to prevent them. At the moment, there's a campaign here in Britain, therefore, to beat down the idea that Germany is going to crack wide open very soon, from the inside. It's still granted here that anything may happen. But it's being pointed out that the great mass of the German labor force is working as hard as ever, even harder in some respects, and despite the fears of the German people for the future. It's pointed out that Germany is still getting a fairly steady flow of basic raw materials, that they still maintain their production of coal and steel. They still manage somehow to keep their transport going. It's a matter in which the Germans will lose in the end, for unlike the Allies, their war production is being interrupted. But they haven't lost yet. What we have yet to prove is that we can gain and sustain enough pressure on Germany by land and by air to prevent the Germans from pulling together the loose ends of their defense plans. For in war, time is never on your side. And this is something that the average Briton is getting very conscious of now. It helps explain, perhaps, the definite feeling of tension here these days. It's why the British are so conscious of the delay in Italy, why they wait for a solution to the Lebanon crisis, why people here hope that the next few weeks will give us a clearer picture, clearer than we've ever had before, of how long Germany can withstand the combination of Russian land offensive and Allied air attacks from the west and south. Now, predictions are difficult, but the weeks that remain before the end of this year should see a new flurry of peace feelers from Germany. To some extent, these peace feelers will be no more than scheming and camouflage, an effort to deepen the impression that Germany is cracking in hopes of winning more time. But some will be definite approaches in the hope of finding out what terms the Germans can expect. For there are German interests in military and industrial circles especially, which are very much alive to the danger of a Germany not only defeated, but reduced to chaotic internal conditions as well. The German argument is going to be simple enough, namely that a definition of terms in advance of unconditional surrender will prevent sacrifice on both sides. To back up this argument, the Germans want to be able to point to improvements in their ability to fight on and their ability to inflict damage on us as well. And the basic reasoning and method of the Germans here will turn out to be simple enough, it's felt here in London. They will try to demonstrate that they can stay organized despite all the punishment we can deal them, and that they still have some cards to play. And their actual peace moves may be nicely timed with some solid blows by air or by new weapons against this country. What the Germans undoubtedly hope for, above all else, is that they can smash an Allied invasion of Western Europe. Possibly, according to neutral sources, through use of new weapons, such as giant rocket guns. And there's no question here but what the Germans are getting ready to counter such an invasion. They're saving their planes for it. They're bringing back equipment from Norway. If necessary, they'll abandon Norway and Finland. In fact, their plans here may already be underway. If the Germans have a gamble left, it's that of proving somehow that their fundamental organization for war can operate for a long time to come. It can't. It may break at any time, for reasons the Germans can't control. But the Germans still hope for an Allied fumble within reach of the goalposts. Indirectly, this raises the great problem of what sort of a post-war Germany we're going to see develop out of this war. The new European Advisory Commission will begin operations here shortly. Among other things, the Commission undoubtedly will consider the question of what to do with Germany after the war, how Germany is to be governed, what sort of reparations are to be expected, what role post-war Germany will play in European trade, what's to be done about restoration of property. These are problems which will be difficult or easy, depending on how much confusion develops inside Germany after the surrender, how much civil war and strife develops all over Europe, for that matter. Germany must be defeated on the basis of unconditional surrender. But this doesn't eliminate the problem, as one sees it here, of getting Germany to quit in a condition where reconstruction will be as simple as possible. Among other things, there's the question of post-war Germany as an economic unit in relation to other countries. This is something which needs a great deal of study. Either Germany will produce for years to come to pay reparations, or Germany will have some share in international trade. Either way, great economic adjustments are necessary. So much so that a United Nations Economic Conference may be advisable. There's some indication here that plans for something like this are being considered for next spring. In an organized effort to get together on such questions as international currency and to prevent a race for economic advantage which may rob victory of its purpose. The British, it's clear, would welcome something like this, especially to get a better picture for themselves of American post-war trade policy. But if an economic conference is held, if such a conference indeed proves practical and feasible, it should be held before the war ends, before the sweet flavor of a post-war boom in world trade dulls our perceptions of the economic pitfalls that lie ahead. Meanwhile, the war remains. Within a few days now, American fighting men here in Britain are going to celebrate Thanksgiving Day. They'll sit down to a Thanksgiving dinner with their own thoughts of previous such dinners at home, with their own thoughts of when they'll be home with their job finished. For most, the Thanksgiving dinner here will be only a brief occasion, with work as usual. In their own minds, these American fighting men, as you see them here, are confident about the future, largely because they have confidence in themselves, but also because they sense the general feeling of basic confidence here in Britain. Then, too, they feel that they are going to be taken into battle on the basis of a well-prepared and well-thought-out plan of attack. 4 years of war can, after all, produce a great deal of experience in war, a great fund of accumulated knowledge about war. And here in Britain, that experience and knowledge is now being applied to a final master plan. There's a great pooling of information going on here, and this much can be said. When the final attack on the continent comes, it's going to make full use of what's been learned in other theaters of war. What remains is a matter of timing, the vital question of how best to break the German defenses, whether on land or in the air. This is Elmer Peterson in London saying goodbye on this program until this time next week.
You've been listening to War Telescope, a weekly report on the war as seen from London by Elmer Peterson, NBC's veteran observer in the British capital. Mr. Peterson is presented each Saturday at this same time over most of these stations from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.